Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Goals, Health, and Success Show. This is your host, Dr. John DeWitt. And today I'm here to talk about fluoride in your drinking water. Good idea or bad business? Now, I was just at an event a few weeks ago where Dr. David Kennedy spoke, and he is the producer and publisher of the movie Fluoride Gate, and there's a link in the show notes, fluoridegate.com, that really is a pretty amazing, enlightening feature. Just a little bit about him. He's the past president of the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. His BA is in comparative biochemistry and physiology from the University of Kansas. And his doctorate of dental surgery is from the University of Missouri. So he definitely knows what he's talking about. I was very impressed by him. He was a very approachable guy. Just sat there in a chair on the stage and just went through everything that he's probably said a million times. And when you hear it the first time, it's shocking. He brought to light different facts, such as 500 million tons of fluoride are dumped into America's water supply every single year. And he enlightened us to the fact that that comes from phosphate fertilizer companies. And it kind of made me think, he's like, okay, well, there's probably fertilizer all around the world. So what other company or what other countries actually allow fluoride or other additives to be put in the water? And so this is from fluoridealert.org. In Europe, only Ireland, Poland, Serbia, Spain, and the UK fluoridate any of their water. Most developed countries, including Japan, and 97% of the Western European population do not consume fluoridated water. In the U.S., about 70% of public water supplies are fluoridated. This equates to approximately 185 million people, which is over half the number of people drinking artificially fluoridated water worldwide. Over half. Leave it to the Americans, yeah. Some countries have areas with high natural fluoride levels in the water. These include India, China, and parts of Africa. Now, in these countries, they're actually taking measures to remove the fluoride because of the health problems that fluoride can cause. So in this next 30 minutes or 28 minutes or however many minutes it is, I'm going to go over as many reasons that I can why fluoridation and adding fluoride in the water is a bad medical practice. Now, number one, fluoride is the only chemical added to water for the purpose of medical treatment. You heard that right. It is medical treatment. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration classifies fluoride as a drug when used to prevent or mitigate disease. And as a matter of basic logic, adding fluoride to water for the sole purpose of preventing tooth decay, which is a non-waterborne disease, is a form of medical treatment. All other water treatment chemicals are added to improve the water's quality or safety, which fluoride does not do. Does not do. It's unethical. Informed consent is standard practice for all medication and one of the key reasons why most of Western Europe has ruled against fluoridation. With water fluoridation, we are allowing governments to do to whole communities, forcing people to take a medicine, irrespective of their consent, what individual doctors cannot do to individual patients. So we're just letting the doctor or the government just give all kinds of stuff that medical doctors can't do because there's no informed consent. If you put it another way, does a voter have the right to require that their neighbor ingest a certain medication, even if it is against that neighbor's will? Well, obviously the answer to that is no. And this is some of the really scary stuff because when you think about it, the dose can't be controlled. Once fluoride is put in the water, it is impossible to control the dose that each individual receives because people drink different amounts of water. In California, I haven't had tap water in forever because I know how toxic it is. But back when I was a kid, I used to drink water out of the hose, things like that, and that it's just so toxic nowadays. Now, being able to control the dose that a patient receives is critical. Some people, such as manual laborers, athletes, diabetics, and people with kidney disease, drink substantially more water than others. We recommend in our office that you drink half your body weight in ounces of water every day just for basic health. So it's a big deal. And if you're drinking as much as you should, you're just getting so much fluoride, it's scary. So the fluoride goes to everyone, regardless of age, health, or vulnerability. According to Dr. Arvid Carlson, the 2000 Nobel laureate in medicine and physiology, and one of the scientists who helped keep fluoridation out of Sweden, he said that water fluoridation goes against leading principles of pharmacotherapy, which is progressing from a stereotype medication of the type 1 tablet 3 times a day to a much more individualized therapy as regards both dosage and selection of drugs. The addition of drugs to the drinking water means exactly the opposite of an individualized therapy. So now, not only in the drinking water, but people now receive fluoride from many other sources, including food and beverages processed with fluoridated water, fluoridated dental products, mechanically deboned meat, that's lovely, tea, green tea, pesticide residues, on foods. It is now widely acknowledged that exposure to non-water sources of fluoride can have a significantly increased danger and has gone up significantly more since the program first began, which was 10 years ago. Fluoride is not an essential nutrient. No disease, not even tooth decay, is caused by a fluoride deficiency. We always talk in the office about dis-ease or ill health is based on you either have a deficiency or a toxicity. So you have too much of something or you have not enough of something. Fluoride is not a deficiency in fluoride. It's not a cause of cavities. So you don't need more fluoride to help prevent cavities. It doesn't make any sense. Not a single biological process has been shown to require fluoride. So nothing that happens inside your body requires fluoride. On the contrary, there is extensive evidence that fluoride can interfere with many important biological processes. So it's not needed for any processes, but it can interfere with a lot of processes. Fluoride interferes with numerous enzymes in combination with aluminum. Fluoride interferes with G proteins, and such interactions give aluminum fluoride complexes the potential to interfere with signals from growth factors, hormones, and neurotransmitters. More and more studies indicate that fluoride can interfere with the biochemistry in fundamental ways. So, okay, we're going to mass medicate the population with something that the body has no need for, no process needs it in the system, and it actually interferes with some of these really important processes in the system. How much sense does that make? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. The level in mother's milk is very low. Considering reason number 6, which is what we were just talking about with how it interferes with the different processes, it is perhaps not surprising that the level of fluoride in mother's milk is remarkably low. This means that a bottle-fed baby consuming fluoridated water can get up to 300 times more fluoride than a breastfed baby. There are no benefits, only risks for infants ingesting this heightened level of fluoride at such an early age because they're so small, an age where susceptibility to environmental toxins is particularly high. I mean, it's insanity. And this is another really scary fact. Fluoride accumulates in the body. Healthy adult kidneys can excrete 50 to 60% of the fluoride ingested each day. Now, the remainder, 50 to 40%, accumulates in the body, largely in calcifying tissues such as the bones and the pineal gland. Infants and children excrete less fluoride from their kidneys and take up to 80% of ingested fluoride into their bones. That was in a study done by Extran in 1994. The fluoride concentration in bone steadily increases over a lifetime. So it's not like we're getting rid of it and, you know, every couple of days we're starting fresh. It's building up and building up and building up. And it's toxic, people. It's toxic. No health agency is in fluoridated countries is monitoring fluoride exposure or side effects. So there's no regular measurements being made of the levels of fluoride in urine, blood, bones, hair, or nails of either the general population or even the sensitive subparts of the population, for example, individuals with kidney disease. So they're just like giving us all of this toxic substance and don't really want to monitor to see how healthy we are or if it's affecting us at all. It's just the, you know, don't ask, don't tell kind of thing. I mean, it's nuts. The number 10 reason that fluoride is a bad idea. There has never been a single randomized controlled trial to demonstrate fluoridation's effectiveness or safety. Yeah. And it's coming out of your faucet. You're taking the showers in this stuff. There has never been a single, not one, randomized controlled trial to demonstrate its effectiveness or safety, despite the fact that fluoride has been added to community water supplies for over 60 years. There have been no randomized trials of water fluoridation, according to Chang, 2007. Now, randomized trials, what are those? Well, they're a standard method for determining the safety and effectiveness of any purportedly beneficial medical treatment. In 2000, the British government's York Review could not give a single fluoridation trial a grade A classification despite 50 years of research. Now, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration continues to classify fluoride as an unapproved new drug. So they admit that it's a drug, but it's unapproved. But hey, let's put it all in the water. I still don't get it. And there's even dentists out there now that prescribe fluoride supplements to their younger patients. I mean, please, if you're doing that, or if your dentist for your kids does that, don't do it. Don't take a fluoride supplement. It makes no sense. Swallowing fluoride provides no or very little benefit. So the benefit is topical, not systemic. The Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, has now acknowledged that the mechanism of fluoride's benefits are mainly topical, not systemic. There's no need whatsoever, therefore, to swallow fluoride to protect health. Since the purported benefit of fluoride is topical and the risks are systemic, it makes more sense to deliver the fluoride directly to the tooth in the form of toothpaste. Since swallowing fluoride is unnecessary and potentially dangerous, there's no justification for forcing people against their will to ingest fluoride through the water supply. And if you'll even read right on your tube of toothpaste, it says if you swallow a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, a pea-sized amount, you're supposed to call poison control. And if you're old enough, you remember back when you can actually roll the tubes up and they would stay rolled up. Well, that's because the tubes used to be lead. So you're rolling up lead, you've got lead in your toothpaste, you've got fluoride in your toothpaste. It's craziness, it's insanity. Okay, fluoridation is not necessary. This is number 12. I'm going a tiny bit ahead of schedule, but I'm good. It's not necessary. Most Western industrialized countries have rejected water fluoridation, but have nevertheless experienced the same decline in child dental decay as fluoridated countries. So in other words, if you have fluoridated water or not, there's the same amount of decline in cavities. So how about we don't do the fluoridated water because it's got so many risks. It's ridiculous. Now here, fluoridation's role in the decline of tooth decay is in serious doubt. This is number 13. The largest survey ever conducted in the U.S., over 39,000 children from 84 different communities by the National Institute of Dental Research, showed little difference in tooth decay among children in fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities. According to the NIDR researchers, the study found an average difference of only 0.6 decayed, missing, and filled surfaces in the permanent teeth of children aged 5 to 17 residing their entire lives in either fluoridated or unfluoridated areas. This difference is less than one tooth surface and less than 1% of the 100-plus tooth surfaces available in a child's mouth. Large surveys from three Australian states have found even less of a benefit, with decay reductions ranging from 0 to 0.3 of one permanent tooth surface. None of these studies have allowed for the possible delayed eruption of the teeth that may be caused by exposure to fluoride, for which there is some evidence. A one-year delay in eruption of the permanent teeth would eliminate the very small benefit recorded in these modern studies. I mean, come on, people. We've got to open our eyes. Not everybody always has the whole community's, the whole population's best interest in mind. You need to ask questions. You don't just take things at face value. You need to do your research. You need to go to fluoridealert.org. You need to go to get the movie Fluoride Gate and just educate yourself. and bring the studies to your dentist, to your pediatricians, and say, what is this all about? Is this required? Do I have to do this? Why do we have to have this in the water? I don't understand. Yeah, it's frustrating. Number 14, the National Institute of Health funded a study on individual fluoride ingestion and tooth decay and found no significant correlation. It was a multi-million dollar U.S. National Institute of Health funded study found no relationship between tooth decay and fluoride intake among children. This was in 2009. This is the first time tooth decay has been investigated as a function of individual exposure as opposed to mere residents in a fluoridated community. So we got to go down to the per-person issue. Tooth decay is high in low-income communities that have been fluoridated for years. So despite some claims to the contrary, water fluoridation cannot prevent the oral health crisis that result from rampant poverty, inadequate nutrition, and lack of access to dental care. There have been numerous reports of severe dental crises in lower-income neighborhoods of U.S. cities that have been fluoridated for over 20 years, Boston, Cincinnati, New York City, and Pittsburgh. In addition, research has repeatedly found fluoridation to be ineffective at preventing the most serious oral health problem facing poor children, namely baby bottle tooth decay, otherwise known as early childhood caries or cavities. Number 16, tooth decay does not go up when fluoridation is stopped. Where fluoridation has been discontinued in communities from Canada, the former East Germany, Cuba, and Finland, dental decay has not increased, generally continued to decrease. So it's not helping. I mean, it's not doing anything except negative things. It's a neurotoxin, for Pete's sake. So it's interrupting all these different processes in your body, and it doesn't affect cavities at all. Number 17, tooth decay was coming down before fluoridation ever started. Modern research shows that decay rates were coming down before fluoridation was introduced in Australia and New Zealand and have continued to decline even after its benefits would have been maximized. This was from Colquhoun, 1997, and Deisendorf in 1986. As the following figure indicates, it's a graph, and it shows that tooth decay was declining even though fluoridated toothpaste just skyrockets and fluoridated water is staying the same, but there's a constant decline in tooth decay. I mean, it makes no sense. All right, let's skip ahead to some other ones here. Number 19, children are being overexposed to fluoride. The fluoridation program has massively failed to achieve one of its key objectives, which was to lower dental decay rates while limiting the occurrence of dental fluorosis, which is a discoloring of tooth enamel caused by too much fluoride. The goal of the early promoters of fluoridation was to limit dental fluorosis in its very mild form to 10% of children. In 2010, however, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that 41% of American adolescents had dental fluorosis, with 8.6% having mild fluorosis and 3.6% having either moderate or severe dental fluorosis. As the 41% prevalence figure is a national average and includes children living in fluoridated and unfluoridated areas, the fluorosis rate in fluoridated communities will obviously be higher. The British government's York Review estimated that up to 48% of children in fluoridated areas worldwide have dental fluorosis in all forms, with 12.5% having fluorosis of aesthetic concern. So it's so bad you're going to be concerned about how your teeth look. And they were hoping that it was going to get down to 10%. No. It went up to 41% in America. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. How long does the insanity have to go on? It's been going on for over 40 years in America. We have got to talk to our representatives and get the fluoride taken out. But that's the tricky part. What you can do is you can go to, if you're not worried about showering, shaving, washing your foods and things in fluoridated water, but you want to make sure you're not drinking fluoridated water, then they have filters, and some of the best filters are the Dalton filter that we have, DaltonUSA.com. We have that in our office. It takes out the fluoride, the chlorine, everything. It's about $300 or $400, but you can go to Doulton USA. It's DOULTONUSA.com, I believe. And you can get a filter there to hook up on your faucet at home in the kitchen. They actually also have whole house water purification systems that can take the fluoride out. They're considerably more expensive. And if you live in an apartment, obviously you can't do that. But there are ways that instead of, you know, just having all of it taken out of the water supply, you can just filter it out yourself. But that's the point. It should not be that way. You shouldn't be the one that has to take care of yourself, that you should not have to worry about your government is poisoning you. So that's just my 3 cents worth on that one. So now, the evidence of harm to other tissues, dental fluorosis, may be an indicator of a wider systemic damage. There have been many suggestions as to the possible biochemical mechanisms underlying the development of dental fluorosis, and they are complicated for a lay reader to understand. While promoters of fluoridation are content to dismiss dental fluorosis in its milder forms as merely a cosmetic effect, it is rash to assume that fluoride is not impacting other developing tissues when it is visibly damaging the teeth by some biochemical mechanism. Moreover, ingested fluoride can only cause dental fluorosis during the period before the permanent teeth have erupted, 6 to 8 years. Other tissues are potentially susceptible to damage throughout life. For example, in areas of natural high levels of fluoride, the first indicator of harm is dental fluorosis in children. In the same communities, many older people develop skeletal fluorosis. Now here we're going to talk about the neurotoxicity of fluoride. Fluoride may damage the brain. According to the National Research Council in 2006, so 10 years ago, it is apparent that fluorides have the ability to interfere with the functions of the brain. In a review of the literature commissioned by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, fluoride has been listed among about 100 chemicals for which there is substantial evidence of developmental neurotoxicity. It's a neurotoxin put in the drinking water. I mean, the EPA admits it right there. Animal experiments show that fluoride accumulates in the brain and alters mental behavior in a manner consistent with a neurotoxic agent. That was Milnix in 1995. In total, there have now been over 100 animal experiments showing that fluoride can damage the brain and impact learning and behavior. According to fluoridation proponents, these animal studies can be ignored because high doses were used. However, it is important to note that rats generally require 5 times more fluoride to reach the same plasma levels in humans. Further, one animal experiment found effects at remarkably low doses. In this study, rats fed for 1 year with 1 part per million fluoride in their water, the same level used in fluoridation programs, using either sodium fluoride or aluminum fluoride, had morphological changes to their kidneys and brains, an increased uptake of aluminum in the brain, and the formation of beta amyloid deposits, which are associated with Alzheimer's disease, so the beta amyloid plaquing. Other animal studies have found effects on the brain at water fluoride levels as low as 5 parts per million. So don't tell me it's like, oh, we're giving the animals so much. That's the problem. No. And remember, it accumulates in the system. So it's not like, oh, okay, they're giving them that, whatever. It's your lifetime accumulation of fluoride. It's going to build up. You're only going to be able to get rid of 50 to 60% of it. And then it's going to build up some more. And then it's going to build up some. Fluoride may actually lower IQ. There have now been 33 studies from China, Iran, India, and Mexico that have reported an association between fluoride exposure and reduced IQ. One of these studies in 1991 by Lin indicates that even just moderate levels of fluoride exposure, 0.9 parts per million, can exacerbate the neurological defects of iodine deficiency. Other studies have found IQ reductions at 1.9 parts per million, 0.3 to 3 parts per million, 1.8 to 3.9 parts per million, and it goes on and on and on. And in one of these studies, each 1 part per million increase of fluoride in the urine was associated with a loss of 0.59 IQ points. So none of these studies indicate an adequate margin of safety to protect all children drinking artificially fluoridated water from this effect. According to the National Research Council, the consistency of the results in fluoride to IQ studies appears significant enough to warrant additional research on the effects of fluoride on intelligence. Now, this is what they always say when they basically got caught with their pants down and have proven something they didn't think they were going to prove. that, yeah, it affects your intelligence, your IQ. And so they say, oh, well, we need to do more studies. They don't want to admit that, oh, we better stop this or do anything. They don't want to cause a panic. So we just need to do more studies. Well, I mean, the studies are already out there. The NRC's conclusion has recently been amplified by a team of Harvard scientists, thank God, whose fluoride IQ meta review concludes, and a meta review means they took a whole bunch of different studies and accumulated all the data. It concluded that fluoride's impact on the developing brain should be a high research priority. Now, they're not saying you have to, do it. They're not saying, oh my gosh, stop doing that. But at least they're saying it's a high research priority. And except for one small IQ study from New Zealand, no fluoridating country has yet investigated the matter. Because there's no money in it. All the money is in all the big pharmaceuticals and all the other, hey, why don't you do this test drug and we'll pay you and whatever. And then if you don't die, then I guess, okay, we're going to make all these billions of dollars because it's going to help do this and that. It's nuts. Fluoride may also cause non-IQ neurotoxic effects. Reduced IQ is not the only neurotoxic effect that may result from fluoride exposure. At least three human studies have reported an association between fluoride exposure and impaired visual spatial organization, while four other studies have found an association between prenatal fluoride exposure and fetal brain damage. Yeah, brain damage. Awesome. I've only got a couple more minutes left, so I'm just going to try to get here. These next two are good. Fluoride affects the pineal gland. Studies by Jennifer Luke in 2001 show that fluoride accumulates in the human pineal gland to very high levels. In her PhD thesis, Luke has also shown in animal studies that fluoride reduces melatonin production and leads to an earlier onset of puberty. Consistent with Luke's findings, one of the earliest fluoridation trials in the U.S., which was by Schlesinger in 1956, it reported that on average, young girls in the fluoridated community reached menstruation 5 months earlier, 5 months earlier than girls in the non-fluoridated community. Inexplicably, no fluoridating country has attempted to reproduce either Luke's or Schlesinger's findings or examine the issue any further. I mean, they're trying to brush it under the rug. They don't want people to know. This next one, we get a lot of patients asking questions about this. Fluoride affects thyroid function. Now, according to the U.S. National Research Council in 2006, several lines of information indicate an effect of fluoride exposure on thyroid function. In the Ukraine, Bachinsky in 1985 found a lowering of thyroid function among otherwise healthy people, and that was at 2.3 parts per million in fluoride in water. In the middle of the 20th century, fluoride was prescribed by a number of European doctors to reduce the activity of the thyroid gland for those suffering from hyperthyroidism or overactive thyroid. So now that was in the middle of the 20th century. They were prescribing it to reduce the activity of the thyroid. Now it's in the drinking water. I'm just speechless. According to a clinical study by Galletti and Joyette in 1958, the thyroid function of hyperthyroid patients was effectively reduced at just 2.3 to 4.5 milligrams per day of fluoride ion. Now, to put this finding in perspective, the Department of Health and Human Services in 1991 estimated that total fluoride exposure in fluoridated communities ranges from 1.6 to 6.6 milligrams per day. This is a remarkable fact, particularly considering the rampant and increasing problem of hypothyroidism, which is underactive thyroid, in the United States and other fluoridated countries. Symptoms of hypothyroidism include depression, fatigue, weight gain, muscle and joint pain, increased cholesterol levels, and heart disease. Now, in 2010, the second most prescribed drug of the year was Synthroid, which is a hormone replacement drug used to treat an underactive thyroid. And it goes on and on. Fluoride causes arthritic symptoms. Fluoride damages bone. It may increase hip fractures in the elderly. It is bad for people with kidney function issues. May cause bone cancer. Proponents have failed to refute the Basin osteosarcoma study. I mean, there's all kind of, it can have reproductive problems. So, what else? What else? Some individuals are highly sensitive to low levels of fluoride. It's crazy. So there's no margin of safety for several health effects. So no amount of fluoride is healthy. I don't care. Don't put it in the water. Get you a really good Dalton filter to get the fluoride out of your drinking water, and be healthier. I mean, this is insanity. It needs to stop. So this is Dr. John DeWitt with the Goals Health and Success Radio Show. I appreciate you listening to me ramble on, but this is something that really needs to be addressed. So don't forget, it's fluoridegate.com and thefluoridealert.org.